Hi, this is Jennifer from the Talking Information Center. Today is Thursday, April 9th, and I'll be reading from the Attleboro Sun. Oil prices jump back up over $100 a barrel on skepticism over fragile U.S.-Iran ceasefire by Chan Ho Him and Matt Ott. Oil prices skipped higher early Thursday, and Wall Street veered toward modest losses on skepticism over a fragile and muddled ceasefire deal between the U.S. and Iran. Futures for the S&P 500 and NASDAQ each slid 0.4% before the opening bell, while futures for the Dow Jones Industrial Average dipped 0.5%. The declines came one day after all three indices gained between 2.5% and 3%, following U.S. President Donald Trump's announcement of a two-week ceasefire with Iran late Tuesday. Doubts about the durability of the ceasefire arose just hours after the announcement as a round of intense Israeli strikes on Lebanon killed and injured hundreds. Iran again closed the Strait of Hormuz in response to the attacks on Lebanon. That sent oil prices climbing back towards $100 a barrel Thursday, reversing an early plunge on optimism over the temporary ceasefire agreement. Benchmark U.S. crude was 5.4% higher on Thursday at $99.44 a barrel. Brent crude, the international standard, rose 4.1% to $98.70 per barrel. Uncertainties over global energy supply remained. The Strait of Hormuz, a choke point for energy transport where a fifth of the world's oil typically passes, was largely closed, even though the U.S. repeatedly demanded that it be reopened. Oil prices rebounded as fighting in the Middle East continued and the ceasefire outlook deteriorated, keeping uncertainty around the Strait of Hormuz firmly in focus, ING Bank analysts Iwa Manthi and Warren Patterson wrote in a note Thursday. Talks to pursue a permanent end to the war could start in Pakistan on Saturday, and Vice President J.D. Vance is expected to lead the U.S. delegation. Trump posted on his Truth social media platform that U.S. military will remain in the region until such time as the real agreement reached is fully complied with. Elsewhere, at midday in Europe, Britain's FTSE 100 fell 0.3%, France's CAC 40 dropped 0.9%, and Germany's DAX lost 1.3%. Asian shares closed mostly lower. Tokyo's Nikkei 225 dropped 0.7% to 55,895.32, while South Korea's Kospi lost 1.6% to 57,78.01. Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell 0.5% to 25,752.40. The Shanghai Composite Index was down 0.7% to 39,66.17. Australia's S&P ASX 200 edged up 0.2% to 89,73.20. Taiwan's TAIEX was 0.3% higher, while India's Sensex dropped 1.6%. The U.S. dollar rose to 158.98 Japanese yen from 158.57 yen. The euro was trading at $1.1681, up from $1.1663. Democrats grow bolder on talk about removing Trump from office after his Iran threats. By Stephen Groves, Lisa Mascaro, and Kevin Freaking. President Donald Trump's threat to wipe out Iran, a whole civilization, ended the restraint that the Democrats have mostly practiced when it comes to questions of removing him from office in his second term. By the dozens, Democrats came out to say that Trump should no longer serve in the White House, either through the impeachment process or the 25th Amendment, which allows the vice president and the cabinet to declare that a president is no longer able to perform the job. While Trump eventually pulled back on his threat and agreed to a two-week ceasefire with Iran, the episode highlighted the growing demands for Democrats to oppose the Republican president in the strongest possible terms. Calls about Iran flooded into congressional offices, lawmakers said. The breadth of the Democratic pushback underscored the gravity of Trump's apocalyptic threat to a country of more than 91 million people. It also served to raise the domestic political stakes for a conflict that is far from over. The Trump administration faces mounting calls to testify about the war and justify its demands for hundreds of billions of dollars in new military spending. A commander-in-chief who is truly in control would have never gotten into this colossal mess to begin with, said Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer at a news conference Wednesday in New York. In the near term, both Schumer and the House Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries, are shying away from impeachment, instead pushing Republicans to join them and pass legislation that would force Trump to get congressional approval before carrying out any more attacks on Iran. Any attempt to remove Trump from office is doomed to fail so long as Republicans control Congress. House Democrats plan to use a brief session of the House on Thursday to call for the quick passage of the War Powers legislation, but Republican leadership is expected to quash that attempt. We will continue to unleash maximum pressure on Republicans to put patriotic duty over party loyalty and join Democrats in stopping the madness, Jeffrey said in a letter to Democratic members Wednesday. At the White House, Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt defended Trump's rhetoric as effective. I think it was a very, very strong threat from the President of the United States that led the Iranian regime to cave to their knees and ask for a ceasefire and agree to reopening the Strait of Hormuz, she said in a White House press briefing. As they press their case against Trump, Democrats are responding to the worries of their own base and constituents. Congressional offices were bombarded with phone calls and emails this week, largely from people alarmed by the president's rhetoric. In the House, the office of Representative Susan Delbean, Democrat Washington, received a ton of calls and emails Monday and Tuesday, mostly about Iran, but also about impeaching Trump or removing him by deploying the 25th Amendment, said one aide who was not authorized to discuss the internal office situation and insisted on anonymity. When her district staffers in the state office took a break Tuesday, they returned to 75 voicemails on Iran an hour later, the aide said. My office phones have not stopped ringing, said Representative Maxine Dexter, Democrat, Oregon, at a press conference in Portland, urging House colleagues to immediately return to Washington. Dexter's office received more calls on Tuesday, 257, than it has ever received in a 24-hour period since the first-term lawmakers' team began keeping track. The groundswell appeared to be organic rather than an orchestrated campaign to pressure lawmakers to act. While outside groups have been circulating some discussion points, including the legal details around invoking the 25th Amendment, there has not been an organized effort to flood congressional offices with a strategic message, said one Democratic strategist familiar with the situation, who insisted on anonymity to discuss the private conversations. It was simply the horror of what Trump was saying, the strategist said, and the scale of the president's threats that appear to have sparked mobilization. On the political right, several prominent figures, including former Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, also suggested Trump should be removed from office through the 25th Amendment. Democrats twice impeached Trump for actions taken during his first term, but he was acquitted each time. They have tried to avoid such debates for the last 16 months, as they tried to center their midterm message on kitchen table issues rather than opposing a president who narrowly won the popular vote. Then came Trump's threat on Tuesday morning to wipe out an entire civilization. Whether by his cabinet or Congress, the president must be removed from office. We are playing with the brink, said Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York on social media. Such calls for Trump's removal didn't stop after his announcement of a ceasefire. Temporary ceasefire or not, Trump already committed an impeachable offense. Congress needs to get back to work and remove him from office before he does more damage to our country and the world, said Representative Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, a veteran of the war in Iraq. Republicans have the majority in the House and have easily fended off two previous efforts to impeach Trump in his second term. They may have to do so again in the weeks to come, as Representative John Larson, Democrat, Connecticut, has already filed a resolution with a wide-ranging 13 articles of impeachment against Trump. In June, 128 Democrats joined with every Republican to table a resolution sponsored by Representative Al Green, Democrat, Texas, to impeach Trump on a charge of abuse of power after he launched military strikes on Iran without first seeking authorization from Congress. A second impeachment resolution from Green in December generated a 237-140 vote, but there were signs of a shift, with 47 Democrats voting present rather than opposing the resolution outright. Jeffries and others in leadership said that the proper groundwork for impeachment had not been prepared and that they would vote present while keeping their focus on making life more affordable for Americans. It's unclear how Jeffries will handle the demands of another impeachment push. But Democratic leaders are holding a call on Friday with members of the House Judiciary Committee that is focused on Trump administration accountability and the 25th Amendment. Other Democrats have also focused attention on Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and said he should also be removed from office. Hegseth has defended U.S. actions against Iran and has said that American and Israeli forces have achieved a capital V military victory and that the Iranian military no longer poses a significant threat to U.S. forces or the region. Democratic Representative Yassim Ansari, whose family fled to the U.S. from Iran, was among those calling for Hegseth's ouster. She said that she was momentarily relieved that civilians in Iran would not face Trump's threat of a widespread destruction. "We need urgent action for the sake of our national security and the safety and security of the rest of the world," Ansari said. Spring roadwork will remake Mansfield Center, by Rhiannwen Watkins. Drivers should expect detours and delays as multiple construction projects reshape the town center over the next several months. The state-funded work will widen portions of Route 106 and School Street, and bike lanes and sidewalks, and upgrade aging drainage and water infrastructure, DPW Director Joshua Reinke said. One of the largest projects, which began in March and will span 3 years, is Phase 1 of improvements to Chauncey Street, also known as Route 106. Funded through the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, the project will widen about 1,800 feet, or 0.34 miles, of Chauncey Street from Route 140 to Copeland Drive. The redesign includes 11-foot travel lanes in each direction, a 13-foot center lane for left turns, and an 8-foot shared-use path for runners, cyclists, and pedestrians, with a 4-foot buffer on the south side. A 5.5-foot sidewalk on the north side will be reconstructed, along with drainage upgrades, new traffic signals, signage, and pavement markings. A 2,100-foot stretch of School Street from Spring Street to West Street will also undergo a 2-year overhaul beginning this month. Also, funded by STIP, the project will expand multimodal access and includes paving, reconstruction, new curbing and sidewalks, ADA-compliant ramps and crosswalks, a closed drainage system, and 5-foot designated bike lanes. "There's definitely going to be some headaches as they're going through this construction," Reinke said. "But after it's all done, the two main roads into East Mansfield will be brand new and have all sorts of additional accommodation for vehicles, pedestrians, and bikes." In mid-July, East Street will undergo the final phase of repaving, much of which was completed last year, Reinke said. The project added sidewalks on both sides of the road, improving safety, given the connecting bike trail and many kids who walk home from school via E Street. I see them in the afternoons hitting the Dunkin' Donuts on the corner of the gas station there. So overall, improved safety for the area, Renke said. E Street was partially funded through the State Department of Transportation Complete Streets Grants Program. Both streets are expected to be under construction for about a year. As part of its long-term plan to replace older infrastructure across the state, Eversource will be installing a new plastic pipe underground along South Main Street from Mansfield Center to Cobb Street, Reinke said. The project is expected to take 3 months. In the coming months, work will continue on the Spring Street water main replacement that began last year. A remaining section on the easterly portion of the street is still to be completed. Once finished, the road will be repaved and a new sidewalk added on one side. The project is expected to be completed within a year. Getting that additional section of the sidewalk helps improve our greater downtown sidewalk network, Reinke said. That's a big improvement over there. Plastic bag ban, clean water efforts, headline $3.6 billion climate change plan headed for Mass Senate vote by John L. Misick. Single-use plastic bags would disappear from the checkout line and efforts to fight PFAS in water headline, a $3.6 billion bond bill headed for a vote in the Senate next week. The Mass Ready Act, as it's known, cleared a key procedural hurdle on Wednesday as the majority Democrat chamber moves into the thick of budget season on Beacon Hill. The bill, set to come before the Senate on April 15th, is based on a bill that Governor Maura Healey filed with the legislature last year. The proposal is a practical investment in the things that matter most to our daily lives: safe homes, reliable roads, clean water, and strong neighborhoods, the Democratic governor said at the time. In the statement, Senate Democrats pointed out that Bay State residents burn through more than 2 billion plastic bags every year. Those bags go on to leach microplastics into the water supply and also pose a safety hazard to wildlife. Under the proposal, shoppers would leave the cashier line with a reusable plastic bag or a paper bag, according to a summary of the legislation. The proposal also includes $450 million to protect clean drinking water and water infrastructure, $120 million for remediation of PFAS forever chemicals in public water supplies and private wells, up to $500 million in borrowing to help cities and towns prepare and combat extreme weather events. Some Massachusetts animal shelters overwhelmed as immigration enforcement leaves pets behind, by Trey Lavery. With the increase in immigration enforcement and deportations since early last year, many have had to leave behind jobs, school, family, and friends as they are forced to leave the United States. But there's another group that is also being left behind, the cats, dogs, and other pets that are often a beloved part of immigrant households, like any other. And with animal shelters already stretched beyond capacity, the additional pets left with nowhere to go are a new challenge. Mike Keeley, Vice President of MSPCA's Angel Animal Protection Division and an advisory committee member at Shelters Animal Count, a data program of the National ASPCA, said it is difficult to track exactly how many animals have been abandoned or surrendered because their owners have been deported or forced to leave the country. He knew of around a dozen MSPCA intakes directly related to deportations, but said the number was likely much higher, as often the animals are simply abandoned. It's hard to measure, but it is definitely creating conflict within the animal welfare field, where this feels unfair, just like it feels unfair to community members, just because the whole process feels unfair, Kylie said in a recent interview at the MSPCA's Northeast Animal Shelter in Salem. The suddenness of it and the person suddenly being gone, unable to contact friends and family, unable to make arrangements for their pets, adds a layer of complexity and unfairness that I think we're all very empathetic to. The frequency with which pets are dumped with no trace of a former owner means shelters can't always know the reason why. Two major animal rescues, the Animal Rescue League of Boston and Dakin Humane Society in Springfield, told MassLive they had not had any animals come in directly related to immigration. For Sweet Paws Rescue, a foster-based animal rescue organization based in Massachusetts, founder Cynthia Sweet said that while she can't necessarily say for certain that the uptake in abandoned dogs they have seen in the past couple of years is because of deportations, she believes they are connected. Generally, when somebody is detained or deported unexpectedly, Sweet said, their pets turn up abandoned and come to the rescue through local animal control officers. But Sweet Paws has received some owner surrenders where the family is being forced to leave the country on their own, which she describes as heartbreaking. In one recent case, Sweet said a mother had gotten a dog for her children 6 years ago as a puppy, but recently lost her job after a surgery. The family was being evicted, and the mother was forced to send her children back to her native El Salvador and give up the dog, and she was inconsolable. Sweet says she often hears criticism of immigrants and others who give up or abandon their pets in similar situations and thinks it's an unfair judgment. Most of the dogs are in incredible shape. They're not starved. They've been groomed. Their nails are cut. These dogs are loved, she said. But when you're working minimum wage or being deported, your kids are your priority. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, Sweet said around 97% of the dogs that came to Sweet Paws were transported up to Massachusetts from animal rescue partners in Mississippi, and most of the rest were strays picked up in state, usually pit bulls. Now, though, nearly half of the dogs they deal with are from Massachusetts, and many are small breeds found abandoned in areas with large immigrant populations, such as Lawrence and parts of Boston. Those breeds can be popular with lower-income households, which often include undocumented immigrants, because they are more likely to be accepted by landlords and can be purchased from backyard breeders or pet shops, Sweet said. But that also means that the owners are not always as knowledgeable about animal rescues or shelters, or may not speak enough English to get the information they need to find a new home for their pet. Suspect arrested at North Attleboro Motel in connection with Central Falls murder, ordered held without bail, by Stephen Peterson. A man accused of killing a woman at a salon in Central Falls and found at a local motel has been ordered held without bail. Lawrence Beauvais, 66, is facing charges of first-degree murder and first-degree robbery in the death of 50-year-old Putali Kunwar. During his arraignment Wednesday in Providence District Court, a no plea was entered on his behalf, and he was ordered held without bail. Kunwar was found dead at Sue's Salon on Hunt Street on March 26th. She was a longtime employee there. It was an apparent robbery that turned violent, authorities said. The victim was stabbed numerous times, and the cash register was robbed, they said. Video cameras captured part of the crimes, police said. Central Falls police, using recently deployed flock cameras, identified a vehicle, license plate, and the suspect. Beauvais was arrested without incident the next day at the Pineapple Inn on Route 1 in North Attleboro and was charged as a fugitive from justice. Beauvais was arraigned in Attleboro District Court the day he was arrested and ordered by a judge to be held without bail and extradited to Rhode Island. Beauvais was the founder of Los Solidos, the largest street gang in Hartford, Connecticut in the 1990s, and has an extensive criminal record, Central Falls police said. He was released from prison in 2022. Beauvais is scheduled for a status conference hearing on April 6th. Man sentenced for smash-and-grab burglaries that included Wrentham Outlet mall thefts, by Stephen Peterson. A Washington, D.C. man has been sentenced in federal court for his involvement in a string of smash-and-grab burglaries, including at a local outlet mall. Ronald Peterson, Jr., 35, was sentenced on April 1st by U.S. District Judge Indira Talwani in Boston to 37 months in prison, following by 3 years of supervised release, the U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts announced Tuesday. Patterson was also ordered to pay $33,000 in restitution. In September 2021, Patterson pleaded guilty to conspiracy to transport stolen goods in interstate commerce and one count of interstate transportation of stolen goods. Patterson was indicted by a federal grand jury in January 2023, along with two co-conspirators. He was a member of a group of individuals who conducted smash-and-grab burglaries of luxury stores from Florida to Massachusetts, including Wrentham Village Premier Outlets on Route 1A. Patterson was traveling from Washington, D.C. to the Wrentham Outlets with two other men, they said. Early the next morning, Patterson and his co-defendants entered the Gucci store by smashing the store's glass front door and stole high-end merchandise, including handbags, duffel bags, backpacks, and sunglasses, officials said. Patterson admitted his participation in 14 burglaries with a total of $506,532 worth of merchandise stolen. Many of the burglaries were reported by store surveillance cameras. The videos showed a group of men breaking into a store by smashing the glass doors. After entering the closed stores, the men grabbed and stole armfuls of high-end merchandise, authorities said. The investigation revealed that Patterson sold the stolen merchandise on his social media account. He had posted images of Gucci bags that appeared similar to ones stolen at the Wrentham Mall, they said. Wrentham police and the FBI were involved in the investigation, along with other police departments. That's all the time we have today. I'm Jennifer at the Talking Information Center. Thank you for listening to the Attleboro Sun.